Metabolab, your biohack, a podcast where metabolic, cellular health is the priority.
Mindset, sleep cycle, nutrition, fitness, mitochondria, anti-aging, hormone disruptors, oxidative stress, fasting, ketosis, genomic-based precision medicine.
Biohacking is not simply a trend, it's the way to a longer, more abundant life. It is not just the future of health science, it is the future of medicine.
Welcome to the podcast, Metabolab, your biohack, with your host, Dr. Heather Bartlett, a healthcare innovator, disruptor, physician, and entrepreneur with a laser focus on using science to our cellular advantage. And without further delay, here's your host, Dr. Bartlett.
Episode 5 already. Can you believe it?
Is it really 5? Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, the first one was like 6 minutes. I count that. It was a labor of love.
Yeah.
So today I'm very excited because Berg decided electively to take the leap and to utilize continuous glucose meters or CGMs. And this is going to be, we thought, well, heck, a lot of people always have questions about it and they make it all very spooky and scary in their head that like, this is a terrible thing and it's going to hurt so bad and it's going to be so complicated and da, 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 da. Again, we understand that, but like, what better way to make you realize it's not that bad or that complicated than we're going to do this with Berg. She's going to do this for us, which is insanely kind. And she's also got her other patches to put over the top that I always recommend patients getting so it doesn't get knocked off. So yep. She's rocking and rolling.
Yep.
All right. So before we, do you want to do this right now and then we talk about the why after, or what would you like to do?
Let's do it right now and then we can talk about the why after. I don't know.
Let's do it. Let's put that on. So we're going to move forward because it takes about usually so that she's got the Freestyle Libre 2, which is a 14-day sensor, which is awesome because you get to keep it on there for 2 days, assuming you put it on properly. And you do some level of protection. They say you don't need to. I've had a lot of, in my DPC practice, there was a lot of accidental knocking off of this or that. And so that's why I recommend there's these patches you can get on Amazon just to throw over it. Because once you engage that little microfilament that goes into your interstitial fluid, into your cells right there, once it's done once, you can't put it back in if it falls off. So you really want to do it the best way and maintain it the best you can. Okay. So this is what Berg is doing. She's already got her phone app loaded for the Freestyle Libre. Yep. And I'll take it from here, Berg.
Great. Right. Okay. So the prescription that I got, and I don't know if this is what you normally do, but the prescription through CVS was two-week. So one prescription is one order is for two-week things. So I've got 4 2-week things, which means 2 months worth of things.
56 days worth. Yep.
Got it. Okay.
Yep. 8 weeks. 8 weeks worth if you've got 4 sensors.
Got it. Yeah. And CVS did, they marked my thing, prescription like 1 of 4. Doesn't matter. I'm starting with 1 just for the countdown. So I remember in the little pack, it has the sensor and the applicator that goes with the sensor, and it comes with instructions and 2 little alcohol wipe pads.
Awesome. Critical to use. If you don't get that skin clean, that adhesive will not stick well and it's going to pop off.
Yeah. So, I did read the instructions already, also on the app. So I downloaded the app. I'm sort of putting it this in an angle here because right on it's not going to work too well.
No, that's awesome right there.
But they do show you. So I went through and I downloaded the app a couple of days ago. So I got the prescription a couple of days ago and then I had to wait for Amazon to send me the patches. And in the meantime, I downloaded the app, filled out my information. And so this is the point where it's telling you to apply it, and then I'll scan the thing to attach the sensor to the app. But one of the pictures, and I don't know if this is normal, but the pictures say that you're going to put it on the back of your arm.
Yeah.
So I assume that that's always the spot.
And some people rotate back and forth, like between arms. You know?
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's less to do with the sensor, in my experience, and it has more to do with adhesive and people wanting their skin to have a break from the adhesive.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to put it on my left arm because I also have a shoulder issue and I'm trying to avoid sleeping on that arm anyway. So maybe this will encourage me to not. Okay.
And just as a quick interrupter here, for those that are like, well, this is useless, I can't see this. For those that didn't know, our podcasts are actually uploaded to YouTube. So you can watch the video of us talking too if you want. So you can listen here.
That makes sense.
You can go to our MetaBlab YouTube podcast channel or playlist, I should say, and you can watch this. So don't feel like you're missing out. You can listen in and then you can watch it later for what you want. All right. Go ahead, Bert.
Okay. So I'm reading the little pictures. Seems dummy proof to me. So
there you go.
So I'm literally going to follow the pic. I'm going to be really good about the instructions and not assume I know what the hell I'm doing. Cause I really don't. I have no idea. I've never watched anybody do this. So it's telling me to wipe the back of my arm first. So I'll do that. And for the record, like just because I'm covered with tattoos doesn't mean this isn't a little bit scary. Okay.
Go in that whole area where any adhesive. Yeah. Could remotely get.
Okay.
You just want to get all of your, well, you want to get all the, I mean, you don't want it necessarily here, right? Because then you're going to bump it off. You kind of say the back of your arm, but it's like back and lateral. So if this is the front of my arm, like here.
So like right there?
Because if you go far too back, you're going to, there's my chicken fat for everybody. Then it's going to, you're going to knock it off. Like common sense. Back of the arm, if your arm is relaxed next to you, you want to go here.
So I can put it like right there?
Not all the way back here. Nope. But like just a little bit.
So right here? Can you see where I'm pointing?
Yes. Yeah. Your arm is littler than mine, I think. So just make sure that you, I think that's good.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to do that. Now that I put my dirty finger on it, I'm going to wipe that off again.
I mean, you have at least you have a video screen that you can actually see what you're doing. A lot of people have no idea. So this should be far more accurate. Is that the second alcohol or the first?
First.
Do the second one. Did it say to do two?
Hold on. Let me see where it doesn't say. It just has a picture of one. I'll do two because I do have two.
I would do two. Okay. I would do two.
I'll do two.
And because I'm a nice doctor, I usually tell people more alcohol, the better. I'm a very oily person.
Oh, I'm like, Italian.
And so like, it's one of those things that like, it's not because people are dirty, but like if you don't get the oil off or any possible dead skin cells, et cetera.
Yeah.
This thing's going to fall. It may fall off.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they make it the best they can, but that's an expensive fall off for something silly.
Right. Okay. So that's number two. Number three is to open this up.
It's like a really fancy juice box.
Yeah.
That's the only juice box we lack right now is the thing that has a CGM in it.
Okay, and my number three is to take this out. And then to unscrew it. Number four is to take it out of the plastic thing. Oh, here we go. Number five is to put it into the thing. Oh, and I'm lining up. So they have a line on here and a line on here. I'm lining up the things. Okay.
This is why we're doing this, folks, so there's no surprises.
And then number five.
Less what? Faces. It's not even on your arm yet, okay?
No, I know. Oh, and then I lift it up, and there it's in there, and it does leave a little plastic thing below. Okay.
Is your arm dry? Is the alcohol totally dry?
It is dry.
All right.
So I'm going to – don't say it like that.
No, listen. Oh, yeah, no. So when you put it on, it's literally like – you know, like a stamp, a paid stamp. That's what's going to happen. You're going to push it all the way down, and then it's going to retract back, and that's it.
Okay.
Read the instructions. Make sure
it doesn't say anything. Number seven, it says to push in, and number eight, it says to pull out.
Yeah. So push it all the way in. It can only go so far.
Okay, I'm doing it now.
Genuine. Yep. Boom!
Okay, that was it.
That was it. Not a big deal. We stub our toe and it's way worse.
That was literally nothing. It did not hurt. Okay. So now.
Yes. The sound is more scary than anything.
Oh my God.
I think that's what freaks people out. And so I was it's like a stamp. It's going to make a.
Okay.
But if you barely engage it.
Yeah. Okay, so now I'm going to do the little sticky thing. So what?
Maybe calibrate it first. Make sure there's no issues before you put that on.
Okay.
So, and I think double check and make sure that you're not supposed to like rub around the adhesive to make sure you got a good stick around it, I think. Just to... Sorry, I just don't want... Maybe they changed it. But I thought you were just supposed to like just pat it down. Make sure it's on there good.
The thing itself?
Yeah.
This?
Yeah. So like there's a tiny little film, right, around the edge, a little membrane. Yeah. You just want to like rub your finger around there, just make sure it's smooth and down. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I can see it. Okay. All right. So let's do also on the app does actually give you little steps on how to apply it as well.
Perfect.
Okay. So next, scan the new sensor. How to scan the sensor. Hold the back of your smartphone near the sensor. Wait until the two tones are vibrations. And you may need to reposition your smartphone, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So let's.
Okay. So I'm going to give you a. Oh, did it?
Oh, that beautiful. Did it. Sensor ready at 5:03 p.m.
And that's an Android.
I need to tell it that I'm in Montana and it's 4:03 p.m. 60
so in an
minutes.
Hour. Where does it say you are?
Oh, okay. I see what it's saying. Sensor ready at 5:03 p.m., 60 minutes remaining. Got it. Okay. So it's not that it started right now. In an hour, it'll be ready.
Yes. So it takes an hour of calibration. So apparently that hasn't changed anytime recently.
Okay.
So you put it on and you just have to wait. That's all you have to do is hurry up and wait. So, and actually, Burke went ahead and put this thing on because we were going to talk a little bit about the why she's doing it. But in the meantime, we're not wasting time so she can excitedly get her thing calibrating. Here we go.
Yep. Okay. So then while this is doing it, then I put the sticker on.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to take the middle part off first, I assume. The peel off one part of paper tab on the back of the patch. Apply the exposed part of the patch directly over the device. This can peel off the rest of the backing paper. Patch is flexible. You can fit it. So the patch is specifically waterproof and sweatproof. I looked for like one of the more active ones because I'm a runner. I'm salty. I'm sweaty. I'm all sorts of things. This is definitely one of those things where if I had another person, I would probably have them help me.
And yet you're a totally capable person.
I am. Yep.
It may not be perfectly centered and we're going to let go of that perfection from one perfectionist to another.
Okay. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, and then I'm going to peel off.
Awesome, Berg. Good job.
Yeah, okay. So that did that. Okay. There we go. Yep. Painless.
Maybe it messes with you. And here's the other thing that's kind of cool about that patch is that, I mean, some people can be like, oh, it's this big black patch. There's a lot of people that don't know about these patches. And so they've got their CGM totally open and exposed. And some people do have a little bit of stigma about that. Nobody knows what's underneath here. That's a nice thing. For all they know, it's like fancy medicine, you know, a biohacking patch or something. Like,
it is a biohacking patch.
Well, it is, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like a dermal patch or something like that. So, and there you go. How exciting is that?
I'm very excited, actually. And then I guess everything just gets tossed. Okay.
And if I, before we go any further, I was just going to say this one thing. So Berg has an Android. So you saw how easy that was with the Android. I had patients who had iPhones and it was a very strange thing because basically, my phone talks to me when I unplug it. But like what was happening was like, if this was their CGM and they were like putting their phone like over it, like you did, and it worked for yours. And we literally had to figure out that some people with some iPhones don't know what the deal is, if it's like the magnetic charge thing or whatever, but like they literally had to like do it like this
Oh.
Something about like getting at the edge, upper edge over the CGM, and then it would recognize it. But they kept going like this all over and it wasn't doing it, but this seemed to work just as from an Apple perspective. So if you're just doing that all over and nothing's happening, just catch an edge of it up at the top and see if that works for you.
It does depend on where the little sensor is as well in the phone, and that may be different for,
I mean, but it was a thing. Like somebody was like, I literally, this is not working. I think this is broken. And I was like, come to the office. Let's figure this out. And that was, we had to figure out. Sorry. Okay.
So I've closed down the app, but I still have just a little message on my apps or on my phone saying sensor is ready in 56 minutes. So it's doing the countdown. And I assume it will alert me to.
I believe you'll be checking it every 2 minutes anyway, so I'm not worried about you missing that.
That's right. So as far as like the why of all this, so when you and I first started talking about all this metabolism stuff and nutritional ketosis and all of that several years ago,
it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. And so probably 3 years ago is when I really started paying attention and adjusting my nutrition. And it was just like the right time. And so for me as an athlete, so when I started this, I'll be very honest, like my whole life was literally changing. Like every aspect of my life was changing when I also changed my, like what I was eating and what I was consuming and paying attention to all sorts of things. So I was training for a trail marathon. I had just ended a 16-year relationship. I was in another one that wasn't particularly healthy, but it was the one that was the catalyst for me moving to Missoula, Montana. I moved to Missoula, Montana. I closed down my yoga studio, my house, and all these things. So all sorts of things were happening. Plus I was teaching a lot of yoga and doing Thai massage. So it was, I'm a very active person.
And you've said this before, so I'm just going to remind people, Berg looks incredibly fit and youthful, and she is, but like for everybody that's out there and they're looking at her and she's like, they're like, oh, but she's like 26.
Berg's not 26.
Yeah. And so there's no excuse just for the record about age. Continue, Berg.
Yeah. Right. And that's one of my biggest things is like, I don't want to. So the reason why I'm also into the nutritional aspect of all of this, I don't particularly care about like losing weight, but I am really concerned about inflammation because my mother died from Alzheimer's dementia. And there's so much research about the inflammation that inflammation is a huge contributor to that. And, you know, particularly
nutrition
from.
Nutrition is a huge driver of that. Yes.
Yes. Particularly that. And also with my mom, like her sleep was terrible. So, I mean, there are all sorts of contributing factors to that. And so watching her decline, I do not want to live like that. And also as an athlete, I want to, so pretty much I love running. I hated it. And then I started it and I got through starting it. And now I love it. Like, and I hate life when I'm not running. So I want running to be fun and feel good to my body. I don't want to be that struggling runner. Right, and so also I've found that running for me, for my body, feels really good. Everything falls into place. Like I have wonderful bowel movements and I just, my brain works and all this stuff. So I didn't do the continuous glucose monitor several years ago. Number one, I think because I thought that I didn't really know the dollar amount, but for me, it seemed like it was expensive, but also, I don't know. There was something weird about having the thing attached.
I found this niche thing and thought to call around, but like they are expensive through insurance and they are expensive. Dexcoms are even more expensive. And it's what you just said. And I think back then, I can't remember if you were with or without insurance, but like a lot of people think I can't do these things if I don't have insurance. And that's not true. If you're willing to invest in your health and you can, if you can find a doctor that's willing to write the script and you call around and say, where's the best deal that you can get at pharmacies, they change things. Everybody thinks that all the numbers are set in stone, but they have a fluctuation of right. what things are, and just call and ask, like, what's the best deal? Do I buy 4 sensors at a time? Does that get me a better discount, or 2 at a time? But your doctor, if your doctor prescribes this for you, needs to know that, because as they write it is what they're going to give it to the patient. So just sending out saying, give them 3 months, they could really hose you with the price of that and make the pharmacist mad, make them do a bunch of work and waste your time. But anywho, I'm sorry, Bert, go ahead.
Yeah. And so I haven't had health insurance for probably 7 years. The moment that I became self-employed and then started actually making money, I made too much money to stay on Medicaid. And I can't afford health insurance, honestly. So, yeah. But you were my primary care doctor, my direct primary care, and that worked for me. Anyway, so I still don't have health insurance. And the price of these, so through the CVS here in Missoula, each month set, so each of the two was $75 with the in-house CVS discount. So this is not with the RX thing.
Good RX
discount. So I didn't have that.
Yeah. It used to be a good deal. It was actually more expensive, Berg found out, this go around. So again, things have changed.
And at least, and I don't know if CVS's are different based on location for price. So for the 2 month, so 4 packs is $160. It may not have even been a total of $160 because I also bought like lotion and eye drops at the same time. So might not have been that much. But anyway, so this time around, the thing that really changed for me is, number one, my best friend out here, she has been wearing a continuous glucose monitor for probably about 4 months now. And every time I meet her, we're sitting for coffee and she's doing this kind of thing. And she's like, oh yeah, that just, you know, so here's my spot. And she's showing me her, you know, based on the choices that she made with her nutrition the day prior, spikes in her glucose. And so she has been trying to adjust her nutrition and her sleep and all of these things, and just seeing how her glucose levels are affected by her sleep, alcohol consumption, foods she's eating, and exercise. So she's also training for a weightlifting competition coming up here in the next 10 weeks. So now is the time when she's like having to drop even more weight to show the her steadliness. But anyway, so so the thing that I've been really interested in right now is so I frequently feel like I'm crashing. So I'm trying to figure out like what is happening when I'm feeling the way that I do. And from a nutritional standpoint, like what am I doing? What did I do yesterday that's causing me to wake up feeling like hell? Or, you know, what can I do after the fact to help balance it out? So I really want to see what's exactly happening. I don't want to be on a glucose monitor the rest of my life, but I want to give myself enough time to really figure this out and go through. So also, I'm not afraid to share this. Like I had a hysterectomy about 9 years ago now. And so I don't have any way to know that I'm actually still going through my cycle. So hormone things happen because I still have my ovaries. So hormonal things happen and I'm like, why am I crying about everything? Oh, but also that will have an impact on how my body's working. So I also want to see like, will I be able to see that cycle happening with the fluctuation of things? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm at finally. And, I know what it's like to feel really good, but I also know even when I'm doing all of these, making all these great nutritional choices for myself and sleeping well, there's still moments where I just feel like shit and I just want to figure out what the hell's going on because there's no need for that. And if I can mitigate it, then I will. And then also I'm doing this because my partner is a crappy eater and I want him to see that although he and I have obviously different bodies and different genetics and all of that, like if he can see what happens when I eat stupid food, then, and how that impacts me, then maybe he will also be interested. And he has said just the other day, like, you go through this for a little bit and maybe I'll think about possibly trying it. So that's a positive.
Powerful thing. Well, you tell me when I get to say something I don't want to interrupt
you.
And go. Okay, well, building on what you said, which is, so I used to have patients that the assumption was when they felt poorly that it was because their blood sugar was low. And then when we started tracking it, they actually felt poorly when their blood sugar was high.
Yeah, and I'm interested in that, yeah.
Yeah, and making, I don't know if that's going to be you, and literally, and I, this wasn't until I started working very nerdly with the CGMs back then to realize that's all we used to go off of as mm-hmm. a physician was, I mean, the subjective, how the symptoms. And we are mostly trained that if somebody is feeling shaky or weak or this or that, then it must be hypoglycemia.
Right.
And it was 9 times out of 10, the opposite. And I was like, oh man, thank God they're doing this. Because, and so all these doctors that are just going off of what a patient thinks is happening and also what we were trained.
Yep.
That's a lot of presupposition and it's not positive for the patient. And also it just tells you how possibly poorly managing we are with people, especially if you're looking at it from a diabetic spectrum, forget diabetic, anybody who's trying to take care of this. All right. And trying to keep people away from insulin resistance and metabolic derangement. But like, what do we do intrinsically with those people that we don't know that their blood sugar is actually high? Well, a lot of diabetic educators, not picking on any, because I know this is what you're trained to do. Well, then if your blood sugar is low, pound in more carbs, pound in more complex carbs. And so the cycle basically is that people, their body becomes attuned to living at this extremely high thing. And so when it comes low, let's just call it up to maybe a tipping point of a normal range, they feel hypoglycemic.
Right.
Like there's some bizarre phenomena that unless you're actually looking and knowing, you don't know. And the only thing that anybody knows otherwise is like, well, you hear the advertisements, you're shaky and weak, your blood sugar must be low. Can't have that in somebody who's, you know, that must be the only answer. If somebody is morbidly obese, you know, gotta,
right.
It's terrible. It's not fair to those people. So that was one thing I was going to say. What other other thing? So actually knowing that it's not a painful experience by any means, it is affordable. I mean, if you know, no offense to Dr. Mark Hyman, he's a genius businessman and physician, and I know he's trying to make big waves and change the world. But like, if you're talking about an affordability thing, find a doctor that's willing. You do a little legwork, figure out where the best deal is, have them send the prescription for this. And it's a much better thing than all of the, there's like four, at least three or four different CGM subscription mm-hmm. things that are out there now. And the thing is that like, I'm all for people having autonomy and learning about themselves. I love that. But on some level, wouldn't it be a better idea if you also have somebody like guiding you a little bit? Because if you're not feeling well and it spooks you and you see this happening, but you continue to feel poorly and you don't know how to change it, well, that's not very useful.
Well, and on top of that, so depending on just from what I've experienced with plugging this in and just from my friend's experience. So if I'm diabetic, the levels that I'm shooting for are different versus if I'm not. So the standard for these things has a different range that it's looking for than what I might be looking for.
That's right. And with that, I will say this, with my patients, I don't let them, basically it's how much is this thing going to be alarming people what their blood sugar is. But the problem is if you aren't willing to deal with the alarms or figure out how to turn them off on the app, I can't remember now, but like if you're not willing to suffer through that, then unfortunately what happens on the back end is that when it's compiling this data at the end and it says, how much time did you spend in your goal? And it looks really great because they have these arbitrarily really elevated ranges for diabetics. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you don't look at that. We're looking at real values and seeing, so you can see, oh, I was 50% of the time I was out of a normal glycemic range.
Right.
And that's what people need to learn. Don't go with the arbitrary things that I'm a good diabetic, pat me on the back, my A1C is controlled and I'm on 5 meds. That's not what the goal is. Well, if it is for you, I won't speak to that. That's to you and your point. But like anybody that's listening to this, I hope that they understand, be truthful about what those ranges are. So you really see how deranged your glucose level is. There are, you know, there's some really interesting doctors on Instagram and TikTok who basically, they blow up the idea. They are so pissed off and angry that patients could remotely want to try to figure something out by themselves that they totally, I'll say it, shit on the idea of using CGMs unless somebody's a diabetic. And even with a diabetic. And it's like, they're like, well, it doesn't mean anything. And I'm like, to those doctors, what I will say, you have literally never worked with a patient and had them coming in and had the ping notifications come up on your iPad so you can track a Freestyle Libre along with your patient. Like, you've never known your patients well enough or tried to actually do something using a CGM for people to learn and to help people change. If it's just, I agree, if somebody is putting it on because they're curious, of course. But if you're doing this, you're making changes and you're checking labs, like there's an intentionality to this. This is a very powerful thing. But yeah. That's not what most doctors are doing. So they shit on the idea. What a terrible thing. A patient may have autonomy and care about their health and may reverse things and maybe they don't need me anymore. Or they've literally never done this level of intentionality. And that's the majority of them. So they have no idea what the potential is, nor the effort that it takes to make that stuff happen. So to anybody that's listening, they're like, another CGM doctor. It's like, no, it works when people use it appropriately and they're working with a doctor and they're paying attention to what they're eating. I mean, I had patients who at the time I was head over heels into nutritional ketosis or keto. Really, it was keto, high fat, because I could not get people this data that I can now for people. And some people, they would have this spike in their glucose and they're doing quote low net carb foods and stuff. And basically we pieced it backwards that it was the tomato sauce, whatever, the fructose, even though it was low net carb, it was really rocking the world. And their A1C wasn't improving during that 3 months too. And then we cut the tomatoes out and it was like, yeah, tomatoes, man. You don't think it's a bad thing, but some people, you don't know unless you're figuring it out.
That's what I'm afraid to learn, because I love my little cherry tomatoes, but we'll see.
Well, and then the other powerful thing about a CGM is, I guess I should have said this before you put this on, but I'll say it quickly. A CGM is reading off the interstitial fluid of the cells. It is not a serum-based measurement. So there's a lot of hesitancy, and there should be, for people who are insulin dependent. They have to inject themselves, and them looking at a CGM exclusively without double checking a finger stick, going off a CGM to figure out how to dose their insulin is a dangerous thing because there's a delay. And so you could underdose or you could overdose. At the end of the day, you, for somebody who is insulin dependent and is having to make a decision on a dose right then, they should be learning and confirming with the serum level. So the serum level is going to change much quicker than this will, no matter what. However, the power of the CGM, not using it for that reason, but looking at overall, you know, some people have slower gut transit times. Some people have gut problems and they don't know it. Some people have, you know, a lot of inflammation. It takes a lot longer for anything to get absorbed. So for somebody who's just like, yeah, I don't think I need this. I check my finger just for fun. I got a glucose meter and I'm doing, you know, as we say, ACHS one right before you eat and 2 hours after. For some people, their glucose isn't going to, it may not spike until like 4 hours after they ate. And you're not going to learn that with ACHS. And man, I think we're screwing a lot of people over in the hospitals, being honest with you. There were so many people that used to come in and it's like you always had to put them on sliding scale insulin just to cover. And it was like, this is a little bit ridiculous. Like just to cover anything possibly. And it's like, these people aren't on insulin. Why are we having to do this? You know, like they backed off a little bit more recently, but it really was that way where somebody was a pre-diabetic, but they're in the hospital, you know, and Medicare is watching us. So we got to make sure we are covering their glucose. So it's like, so we put them through this blood sugar roller coaster for the 2.5 days they're there in the cardiac unit. For what reason? You know, there's a little bit of asinine to that. It's like, yes, they're stressed out. They're in the hospital. Yes, they didn't sleep well. Their cortisol's high. Yes, there's so many things. And they're eating the shit. hospital food on top of it. So anyways,
yeah.
So, but it is a thing of like the utility of the CGM though, is if this thing is rolling high, it took a lot of effort. There was a lot of glucose diffusion throughout the body that had to make that thing kick up. And yep. So that is a powerful thing. So is it really necessarily a minute to minute thing? No. You got to pay attention to what you're eating. Got to pay attention to what your activity is. I always ask my patients, the patients that moved the needle were the ones that were most aware. And how were they aware? They wrote this stuff down. Nobody remembers. Yep. Nobody remembers what they ate the day before, you know,
yep.
Unless you're somebody that eats the same thing every day. There are those people, but most people are not that way.
I kind of do.
I kind of am too. Anyway, but most people don't operate that way.
Yeah.
And so unless you know what you're doing, you cannot make change. And so maybe that's what some of the doctors' beefs are, is that they don't believe their patients will ever know or pay attention. I don't know. I think that's a pretty negative view. I think if you educate people on the power of it, I think that people can make some really profound change. But well, these are the things to know about a CGM. I mean, because if somebody just sees a really sexy ad on Instagram to sign up for a subscription and they don't know the pluses and the minuses, what are you actually looking at? Whatever, then there's really not a lot of utility to it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I, you know, so I'm, I'm battling with living in a new household. So I've been living with my partner now for almost 2 years, and I'm just going to say it. So he's an ex-Mormon. So and Mormons are notorious for eating a lot of sugar. Like they don't drink coffee, they don't drink alcohol, but they drink soda like it's going out of style. So their whole they have Mormon created like soda shops. So like this is just a thing. It's wow. Insane. The going to his family, I love his family, but like going to see his family, the games that they play are all based in like candy and stuff like that. So,
wow.
So the sugar addiction is real because it's like an institutionalized thing. Mm-hmm. And so, I was raised like for all of my mom's faults. Like she was going by the nutrition at the time. I was raised on like seaweed. My mom was a hippie, but I just didn't eat much sugar. Right. So coming into this family, this is hard for me because I guess, being Sicilian though, like what I did have to watch was my pasta, rice and bread. Like those were my big things that I really had to like eliminate. I don't know the last time I've had pasta. It makes me sad, but you know, it feeling like shit.
You know, I was going to ask you when you were in Paris, did you eat grains when you were there? And I'm asking this from a genuine perspective because there are people that swear that they can eat the pasta in Europe and not have the same strain. I'm not saying celiac people or people that have extreme gluten sensitivities, et cetera. But my wife, she eats any grains and even some complex carb stuff. She's a little SIBO-esque and she balloons up. And actually, we had this conversation earlier today. I think maybe I was telling her about your trip. That I wanted to ask you that, but she was like, you know, she went to go visit her friend Marianne when her husband was stationed in Germany, and she's like, we ate the crap out of green stuff, pasta. What she goes, and she goes, this is Chris for you. You know me, I'm not very self-aware about these things, but she goes, but I don't remember hurting when I ate stuff there, and so I was going to ask, but you know, maybe somebody in the podcast that's listening will give us some feedback and let us know. But I mean, about farming methods and pesticides, whatever, like your heritage is what I'm thinking is like for your heritage, actually there in Italy, this may not have been a problem for you.
Right. But, so in Paris, I was dead set on just eating like a Parisian and I did. So every single morning we had their traditional petit déjeuner, the continental breakfast, which was a quarter piece of baguette that had delicious butter slathered all over it, a fresh butter croissant. And I went all out and I dipped it. So they always give you like this much of a little jar of confiture, little jam.
Yes, 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 yes.
And oh my God, I ate the hell out of that. But I had the cafe au lait. So I had the coffee with the cream in it. Mm-hmm. And that was delicious. But yeah, no. And as a matter of fact, no, that was part of my test. And I did not feel bad at all. I was dehydrated because I wasn't drinking enough. Because just walking around, I was just trying to, like, anytime I'm traveling, I mean, just yesterday I had a road trip and I know I didn't drink enough water. So my dehydration was my number one problem, with bowel movements and whatnot. But otherwise, no, it was great. I said, screw it to any sort of nutritional thing. And it was great. I felt great.
There you go. I mean, 6 to 12 miles walking a day.
Yeah, that we helps did walk too. A lot. And on top of that, like, I wasn't snacking either. So, like, I truly was, you know, we got up, we ate, and then we'd walk. And then we'd be hungry. And then we'd go find someplace to eat. And then we'd walk. And then we'd get some food and go sit by the Seine. And then we'd,
that sounds, you know, amazing. Walk.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and when we got, because, you know, when you're flying, you can't carry a bottle, wine bottle opener. So we got the little screw top Bordeaux's. And sat by. So we each only had just one of those. So it's not, I mean, it's maybe a glass and a half. But that was it. And oh my God, I felt great. But then I wasn't working. I was walking a lot. I was in Paris.
Well, look, there's nothing worse than you saying I was in Paris and I had a miserable time. If that's the case, I don't know that you'd be my co-host right now. I think we'd have some real philosophical issues here.
Paris is literally my favorite city on the planet. So,
hey, oh, thanks be to God.
My God.
I mean, it's been a long time since I've been there, but, what I was going to say, one other thing. Oh, about wine, just real quick, because why throw this into a bigger conversation, but like, so dry red wine. So if you look at it from like a net carb perspective, it's low. But I just wanted to bring this up because actually this is a recent conversation.
Did you say red or white?
Red. A dry wine in general is not going to have high carbs, but it's the alcohol content, the OH bonds that sabotage you. So if you look on nutritional guides and it's like, well, this is low net carb, you can have this if you're setting your goal for net carbs and then you're not moving the needle, losing weight, labs aren't changing, et cetera. A bottle of dry red wine, energy, think about this from an energy perspective, calorically is somewhere between 625 to about 725 calories per bottle. It's about 20 to 25 calories per ounce. So if somebody is not paying attention to their dry wine consumption, let's say they're doing good and they're not having the heavy hitter OH bonds of a hard liquor. They're like, well, I'm doing good. I'm doing it in a net carb perspective. I'm just drinking dry, but they're drinking quite a bit. Or, I mean, I don't want to say quite a bit, but like two glasses or a bottle and you don't realize it, or three glasses. And it's just like over, you know, from 5 PM happy hour to all the way till 11 o'clock at night. I don't know. I'm just saying that's a 100 calories running, 100 calories per mile running. You can't outrun that. And specifically, and I'll say this too, you could eat the most healthy thing on the planet. And if you're trying to lose weight and you have one glass of wine, let's just keep it simple and say, I'm just going to have a reasonable six ounce glass of wine. Your body will preferentially, for those that don't know this, will preferentially grab that alcohol, process it, and shunt it to fat because it is an extremely energy favorable reaction. So it wants those OH bonds. When you look at what a fat molecule is, and when you look at molecules, you understand carbon, the oxygen and the hydrogen bonds and how things are linked, what makes something saturated versus unsaturated, polysaturated, all these things. It's the interlinking of all of those molecules and how they're on there. But it's a relevant thing to know, like it wants it and it just punts it into fat. Okay. So for somebody who's struggling and trying to lose weight, it doesn't matter how good the rest of your meal is. You've already sunk yourself with that. So I don't want to be a Debbie Downer about that, but I think people really need to own that because there's so much hype around reasonable alcohol consumption while trying to lose weight. And for a lot of people, that's not going to work. Like it needs to be a very intentional when I say, that's the word I use, intentional consumption. You decide your rate of what your goals are, but you don't get to be upset if you're not hitting your goals because your intentionality was, it was more important to have that alcohol. Or, you know, if it's well, like one of these, if you got a celebration or it's like, okay, well, I'd like to do an experiment and I'm only, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I will drink and I will be excellent the other days, whatever. Fine. It's a long experiment. You want to do that? Fine. But also just know biochemistry hasn't changed. So as quickly as you want to move the needle as quickly as you understand the biochemistry, that's the whole purpose of this clinic is like, don't think somebody's saying do this or don't do this just because nobody explains it. The biochemistry, the body always wants to do what's the most energy favorable thing. Hello, it's called survival. So, you know, we don't want to have all, you know, if I have 20 pounds extra fat on me and I go out into the desert, I don't want my body to shed 20 pounds of fat in 3 days. I want it to be very slow and intentional. That's a survival thing. So right. The fact that it takes it is a energy unfavorable thing to literally burn adipose or fat tissue off your body to do fatty acid oxidation. It's intentionally difficult because it's survival. So don't get in the way of when that's actually working for you. Don't stop it. Why would you want to do that? It's harder to restart things if you have momentum. If it's like easy momentum at the beginning and then you stop, you're like, oh, well, it was easy to start, so I'll just do it again. It doesn't work that way. Again, closer you get to your ideal body weight, your body is trying to do self-preservation, survivalist. Well, I don't want to lose that weight because what if we need it, right?
The other thing when you're making a decision to have a glass of wine or drink alcohol or whatever is also pay attention to how that affects your sleep that night. Because, I was just talking with, and I've seen this with myself. I recognize this with my partner. Anytime he has whiskey, just even a little bit of whiskey, a couple hours before bed, he usually sleeps like shit. And I'm like, well, honey, you had some whiskey. I was just talking to one of our clients the other night who was saying, you know, I've noticed that when I have this alcohol, I sleep like crap that night. And here's the thing of it. So sleep is important. Why is sleep important? Well, for a lot of reasons, but also if you're like me, if I don't get good sleep, that means I'm going to make terrible nutrition decisions the next day. Because when I'm tired, I turn into a toddler. And when I'm tired, I'm like, it doesn't occur to me that I need to take a nap. I'm actually, well, I must need to eat. I must need to have this big fancy, I don't know, smoothie drink or something. Like I make terrible decisions. And then I just like, I go down this whole like spiral of like crappy food decisions and snacks throughout the day. And then I'm like, wait a minute, Berg. Normally when I sleep well, my brain's firing great. I'm smart and funny and clever and I can make great decisions and I don't snack. And then days when I don't sleep, I'm snacking and eating all day long. So I take a nap and then I'm fine.
There you go.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
No, and so it's a thing. It's real.
I know. Yeah. I've warned people around me. Like if I start being super crappy, like tell me I need to take a nap because this is probably what's happening.
Oh, darn it. You said something, which was another important mini spinoff. Berg, what was it?
Sleep, bad decisions, snacking, alcohol, whiskey.
I knew I should have like made a little note while we were talking.
Well, you're always welcome to jump in when I'm talking.
No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that because you have good thoughts and then I cut you off and that's not good. Oh, I know what I was going to say. So, I mean, stepping back just for a second. Everything that we're talking about, I mean, I find it really interesting people that are interested in the clinic and like what you were just talking about with sleep and alcohol, they would be more willing to try a nootropic drug, a mind altering substance like ketamine or what's the one that starts with an M? Right now it's out of my mind, but anyways, but like, these mind bending,
MDMA?
No. It's, it'll come to me later. And if it doesn't, anybody who's listening to this who knows what I'm talking about will be like, oh, yeah, such and such. But like, the purpose of this clinic is not to really to try to, for those that are really motivated to try to feel better, it's to, yes, we're making things go faster in biohacking, meaning knowing about your body, giving you more education, giving you hopefully supplements that are specific to your body that are going to help engage it better, et cetera. That's different biohacking than the perspective of a shortcut or something around something just because you want to see if it helps and it makes something faster or easier. That's really not the intention of this clinic and what we're, what right. we're motivated by and what we're trying to create here. So, you know, if somebody's like, I want to take a nootropic and I want to feel better and I'm also continuing to drink alcohol and I'm also not doing anything to modulate my sleep. And also I'm chronically, you know, I don't know, pick it. Right now in the world, I'm chronically angry because of things that are going on in the world, like all these things that are not being addressed, but I'm going to try to take a pill or, mm-hmm. and I'm not saying there's modafinil, that's it. But like there are places for these nootropics, but I think people are skipping ahead to a place where their neurochemistry is not, it's not dialed in enough to even really be able to use it appropriately. And or see if you actually need it. And there's not great stuff that can happen with some of them. A lot of people swing for the fences and say, oh, it was amazing and I love it, da, da, da. And then there's some people that are like, it. I don't know that these people are embarrassed and they don't want to talk about it, but it's like it really jerked me around. Like I'm not quite right after that. And the other thing is that if somebody's trying to go through something or taking nootropics to like open their mind and deal with past trauma and stuff like that, man, you have to have a counselor involved. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier today. I was like, well, how many people were doing ketamine infusions around here and like looking? And I'm like, I think it's a little, it's not good policy to not somehow have a practitioner working with those patients while they're getting the infusion, because that's when stuff can get unlocked. And just saying you're okay and we'll lower the dose is not, that's not the purpose of those. It's really to like open your brain in sometimes very scary ways for people.
Yeah.
Anywho, side note.
Yeah.
But I mean, the whole thing is everything is how do we build towards being natural superhumans as much as we can? Like what are all the, this goes back to our very first podcast. What are these little micro? I mean, I laughed. I didn't say this when you were saying that. Like, you're like, I made these huge nutritional changes because I uprooted my life and I was like, F it. I'm going to move. I'm going to break up with somebody. I'm going to break up with somebody else. I'm going to start dating this awesome guy who happens to be an ex-Mormon. I'm going to change jobs. And I'm going to change my nutrition. And it's like, that's literally what we told people not to do in the first two podcasts. So I appreciate that. We appreciate that. We're not nutty and talking out of both sides of our mouth. That was just Berg's experience. You know what? There are those people that's like the same thing. They go into their house and then it's just like, they're at a breaking point and they're like, enough, you know? And it's like, they start looking, Chris does this. She looks around her house and she's like, I don't want that anymore. I feel like there's too much stuff. And all of a sudden, shit is listed on Facebook Marketplace. And I got random strangers coming up my driveway picking something up, you know? And I'm like, oh, Chris is doing that. I mean, it's not often, but like there are people that hit that. And I do believe there are people when it comes to health changes that they're like, that's it. I'm done.
That's all.
It's go time. And, you know, those are my favorite clients. And we've been fortunate. We've had some lately that are really motivated like that. And those, we're happy to serve anybody, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's a lot of joy when somebody is like really bought in and they're really seeing the results and they really feel good.
Yeah.
Can't make it up.
Well,
and that's what I tell people when they're like, you know, when they're like, can I go back doing what I did before when I get to X goal?
And I'm
like,
I suppose.
Did that work for you before? Because that's how you got here.
Right.
So the question actually becomes, either you have these behaviors or this nutrition, whatever it is that got you here before you started making progress, is that worth it to you compared to how you feel now?
Right. And
that's
and truly,
like the most powerful drug.
You were, and talking about drugs, like to my experience working with, yoga students and all sorts of things. Like truly, when you start doing something and if you're doing it like pretty religiously and following the program and all of these things, like, especially with this, when you start to check on your nutrition and really pay attention to what you're eating and really dial in on your sleep and you're doing the band exercise and all that, you're going to see some kind of result pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. You truly are. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not going to drop a gajillion pounds in a couple of days, but you're going to see a difference in the first few days. And you just build on those little wins, you know, and if you're screwing yourself, then
the wins are going to be smaller and farther between, and it's going to be frustrating. And the nicest way I can say this is also, it's frustrating for us because we want you. I mean, the whole goal, I don't believe in the notion of people only losing, and I said this before, 1 pound a week and that being acceptable. I don't know where that came from, except for, I mean, I don't know if this was in the podcast we said this, Berg, or it was just you and me talking, but it's like, well, that's how you sell more food. If your Nutrisystem, because it's a really slow expectation of what's going to happen.
That's a long customer.
That is a long customer. Yeah. And so it's, I don't believe it is more dangerous in my mind for somebody to keep that weight on their body longer and like a longer, slower, drawn out process. If it falls off because they're doing the right thing and they feel great, and we're not doing weird appetite suppressants or anything that's going to require an EKG, you know, we're not going to tell them to eat an 800 calorie diet or, you know, I mean, 800 very low calorie diet. That is a thing.
That's sadness.
I had to actually Google this. I was like, what is that? The caloric requirement of,
I don't even what you can eat. Like,
it's a large dog. Lettuce? A large dog is 800 calories a day is what they consume.
Eating the dog?
No. Like what metabolizes a max? Thanks, Berg. No, this is not a dog eating podcast. Good Lord. Okay. No, but
it's what a large dog would eat
in 24 hours, right? And I'm like,
yeah, and that's pretty restricted.
Yeah, I just. I can't believe that's a thing. I can't believe that's a thing. I can't believe liquid diets.
I gotta see what my cat foods, when a can of cat food is calorically. I have no idea. My cats eat Friskies. I have one cat. She's an eater. I bet she eats probably 800 calories a day. She also runs around a lot.
But like, what does that do? I mean, so you dramatically drop weight off of people. I mean, you know, the show,
it's not sustainable.
I could not stand The Biggest Loser. I could not. I've never been able to stand that show. And that was before I even started shifting my practice towards this kind of stuff. I was like, intrinsically, there's literally nothing about this that is sustainable. I mean, so I guess if I was somebody, you know, I mean, we can make the announcement now, unless anybody's looked at my website recently, but like we are going to be offering a medically assisted weight loss program because I'm sick and tired, and Berg is fired up too, about these options for people.
Yep.
Liquid diet, 800 calories, going on medications that only manipulate you, only going to a med spa and getting injections without changing anything else in their nutrition or exercise. And then if it doesn't work, making people feel hopeless. I do believe in the lipo-lipo-B injections and such, but I do not believe in them. If somebody comes to my practice and they're like, I would like to try it and see, and then maybe I need to use your other services, maybe I'll consider that. But I will make zero guarantees that that is the way, the route, or otherwise. But it's like losing weight at what cost? I mean, I put that on my website. You will lose weight, but at what cost? How will you feel? Probably not great, you know. And then even keto, you know, part of why I started doing the genetic direction testing with people and finding the macro stuff out is because there was something that rocked my world with a couple of my old patients that I was like, I think something's wrong. And I did some research and there was this thing called a PPAR mutation. And that just means these people can't burn fat. It's a genetic problem. And you have to do like very severe muscle recruitment to make that in a different pathway to actually get them to do fatty acid oxidation of stuff they consume, let alone what's on their body. And so, you know, there's, I mean, the keto world, if I use the word keto, so if anybody's listening to this in the future, I usually say nutritional ketosis, because what I'm actually saying is what nutrition, it does not have to be high fat, what nutrition plus exercise is getting your body into fatty acid oxidation. And as a side product of that, for sometimes when the generator needs to kick in the liver, so to speak, and create more energy, ketones are produced. I'm saying nutritional ketosis. I'm kind of tapped out and burned out by the term keto, because all it means now is high fat. And tons of people are eating high fat and they are not seeing what their particle size and particle numbers, how that's impacting them before they started, during, and it is.
It's turned into another fad diet.
It has. And it's frustrating to me, because ultimately, literally, if there is a successful, if somebody is losing weight, they are on some level, they are in a state of nutritional ketosis. They are in a state of fatty acid oxidation burning. And likely, if they feel good, they're getting some ketones kicked in there too. But that, I mean, I'm mad about that.
Well, so when, right before we started recording, I told my partner's daughter, I was like, all right, well, I'm going to do this video with Dr. Bartlett. I'm putting on my glucose monitor. And she's like, what, like what diabetics use? And I'm like, well, yeah, but it's, you know, it's to study my glucose and all of that. You know, I'm working towards feeling
and she?
Understanding. She's 24.
Okay. So there's a problem right there. Not on her, but on society. She's already been trained that somebody trying to take using something like this, it's only for the purpose that they are diabetic. And that is literally the purpose of starting this podcast today. I know we've shifted a little bit, but lose the stigma. And if you are diabetic, also lose the stigma. Use this as a tool.
Right. Yep. And I told her, you know, no, I'm, you know, I'm wanting to see what it feels like to be in nutritional ketosis. And she's like, keto, why are you doing keto? And I'm like,
that was awesome perk.
and so then I had to explain. I was like, no, I'm watching my nutrition and my glucose. I don't want my glucose to spike. I'm trying to get, you know, a nice level amount of glucose in my body throughout, you know, as I'm sleeping and going throughout the day and as an athlete. And I said, because my primary interest is because glucose spikes and inflammation, the research is showing that this leads to dementia, and I do not want to have dementia. And that is what she's like, okay, now she understands, because she knows how my mom died.
Right.
So that, you know, but that's the thing, is that, you know, having to explain. So it is important, though, for people, if you're going to do this, to understand why you're doing it and to be able to verbalize it, because the more that you understand it and can reiterate the things that you're telling them, then you can tell other people, so that you don't have to feel defensive. And
if you want to feel defensive and you don't want to explain yourself to anybody, because everybody's got a lot of opinions these days, F them. Do your thing. Somebody asks you, say, it's for my health, period. Yep. They ask why, whatever. It's for my health, period. I mean, it's nobody's business. It's nobody's business. So, you know, if you're somebody that is into it, but also be cautious, just because you can't change somebody's mind about this or what you're doing, or you can't explain it well, like, you know it, but it's like somebody wants to make you feel dumb.
Yep.
Don't engage or just whatever. Like, you do you, you know what you're doing. You've got motivation. Like, this is a strange time. A lot of people have a lot of opinions about everything. That they do, it's none of their damn business.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So. Yeah. No, I agree. And I think, you know, one of my things is I do want to be able to explain to people the importance of recognizing, like,
oh yeah,
you know, your Berg, nutrition.
If you told me you weren't going to talk about sugars, that, I think we'd have bigger problems again. It's like the Paris thing.
Right. Yeah. No. Like, I am hardcore about talking about inflammation and how sugar causes inflammation and how you might feel that in your body and your brain and all of that. I just,
for so many reasons, I've been excited that we reconnected, but like your intuitiveness about your body and performance athletically, I hope our clients on some level appreciate, like, there's so many people that can't speak to that or would never try to or care or would just power through things instead of trying to make things better and learn about themselves. And so like you are a true gem in that. I hope people, they'll figure that out over time. But like, I think you, I'll say that you undersell yourself and your athleticism, and it's a relevant thing. Hey, you're 46 and you're still going, you had some injuries, you're coming back from it. You've changed how you're doing things so you don't continue to injure yourself. Like, you know, the idea of being an old dog and kind of being like, well, I did this in my 20s and now I can't do it in my 40s. So that means I'm old and I can't do it. It's like, well, shift gears. It's like, can't play tennis anymore because your knees hurt. And go play paddleball, pickleball, whatever it is, pickleball. You know, like do something different, but just be like, well, it's over. The thing I like is gone. So now I'm going to do nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no. Mm-mm. Okay. Well, I'll write the check to the nursing home right now too, if you want. We can just accelerate that and mail it to them.
Speaking of nursing homes, my best friend, she coaches exercise stuff at this nursing home down here in Missoula. Two of her ladies who are in their 90s, they just did the Missoula half marathon this past weekend. That's awesome. Good on them.
Yeah.
Those are ladies. I want to be like that. Mm-hmm. And this one lady, she's like, well, I got in second. And so I'm not going to do it again next year. The next day she said, no, I'm going to beat that gal. The third day after the marathon was done, she's like, you know what? F it. Next year, I'm not only going to beat that gal, I'm going to beat the record for 90-year-old ladies in the half marathon.
Awesome.
Good effing honor. Yep.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
That's awesome.
So we'll see. She's kicking ass and taking names. I'm digging it.
Man. I wonder if we could ever talk to her. That would be awesome on the podcast.
I can get it. I can do
that
it.
That could be a fun thing, I think.
Yeah, you know? we can get a group conversation.
Well, Berg, I just want to say thanks so much for sharing your CGM, your continuous glucose meter monitor experience with us. And I mean, is it time? Is it?
No, there's still 17 minutes left.
Ah, rats.
Yeah, but well, I'll keep everybody posted on how
you don't have to, but I mean, it might be mildly interesting, maybe an update or just show what the screen looks like just so people can be like, I've always wondered what it actually looks like when it's reading it. So I hope you set your parameters to be very reasonable. And I'll just say this real quick in case somebody's like listening to continuous glucose meter discussion and they're like, oh, so my goal is always just to have my glucose like really calm. It's not just about it being calm and level because it is going to spike naturally in some ways. And that's a natural phenomenon. Like, so like when you wake up, you're probably not going to eat anything. If you wake up and you have not eaten anything and you checked your meter and all of a sudden your glucose took off and you're in a panic, that's a normal phenomenon. That's part of waking up. Your liver does that. Same thing about exercise. Again, everybody's different in what that turnaround time is going to be. But like after you exercise, usually your liver is going to pump out some glucose to help you with that too. So it's not, and people panic and go, but I don't know why I didn't do this. I just worked out. And it's like, again, having a CGM and knowing what the phenomenon that it's usually normal for, that's fine. You roll with that thing. But then anything else that you're controlling otherwise, that's where the money shot is of learning about your body and tuning in. You know, some people, I remember I had one patient who literally, they would get 10 or 15 points out of their range and they felt like crap. It wasn't high. It wasn't like
they
went
physically felt bad.
Yes.
Not emotionally.
They literally just fell off and just energy was low and it wasn't, I mean, that's another assumption that people make is that like you must be really high, you know, this, and it's like, that's, find your sweet
it's
spot.
Different.
You don't know.
Yep.
Yeah. Berg, thanks so much for this. I mean, I thought this was a good podcast, but you know,
I think so. Yeah. Thanks for
biased,
being here with me.
You know,
put it on.
Yeah. Thanks for being willing. Okay. Yeah. Well, until next time.
Okay.
Signing off.
Toodles.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Metabolab, Your Biohack, with Dr. Heather Bartlett. If you wouldn't mind, please hit the like button so we can share more content with similar-minded biohacking folks. And as always, please feel free to share on your social channels if you found value in today's podcast. If you're interested in working with Dr. Bartlett, please feel free to learn more at www.metabolab.clinic. Again, that's www.metabolab.clinic.
Disclaimer, the previous podcast and content are not medical advice. Always seek counsel with your own private clinician before starting any new health-impacting life changes.